Show. This is your source for Louisiana Tech sports news. For the next 90 minutes, Bleed Tech Blue Radio goes deep inside Tech football, basketball, and recruiting. Tonight's show on Sports Talk 97.7 is also brought to you by O'Neill Gas, Brister Smokehouse, Acme Glass, Dairy Queen, Walpole Tire, and Ideal Portable Building. Text us on the Fairway Carts text line at 888-993-7762. Here's your host, Ben Carlisle.
Let's go. BC, Lane Davison, John Tabor running the board. Bleed Tech Blue Radio, your home for the next 90 minutes. We're talking all things Louisiana Tech athletics. Sports Talk 97.7 FM. Certainly want to thank you for joining us. And you heard that right. Lane Davison filling in for Beck. It's a bye week, so what do you know? Beck takes a bye week himself. Hey. Lane, it's good to see you tonight.
Hey, it's good to be here. Thanks for having me. Beck decided to take the week off, and here I am. It's always good to be in the booth.
Absolutely, yeah. You know Beck. He likes to flake out a little bit when things get going. A slower week on a bye week, Beck takes the week off, but he'll be back next week. One promise we can make you, and Tapes, you'll be glad to hear this. Next week, Beck will have a poem. Maybe it was going to take him 2 weeks to prepare.
Ben.
Maybe he's learning what a haiku
Ben,
is.
I'm going to put his feet to the fire. I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah. Hey, I'm the same way. I'm the same way. So let's go ahead and thank our sponsors, First National Bank, Fairway Carts, Walpole Tire, Dairy Queen, Ideal Portable Buildings, Acme Glass, Brister Smokehouse, and O'Neill Gas. As always, you can call us, you can text us on the Fairway Carts hotline, 888-993-7762. That's 888-993-7762 on the Fairway Carts hotline or text line. So, Lane, you go back to this week, and Louisiana Tech picks up a 23-20 overtime win at Rice. Moved to 4-1, 2-0 in Conference USA play. It wasn't the prettiest game by any means, but at the end of the day, a win's a win, and that's really all that matters.
I mean, yeah, you said it. It wasn't sexy. It wasn't pretty. But the Dogs got to take it. You know, that's a game that historically they've lost and that has cost them a step up in what their goal is, which is a 10-win season. So for them to come out with that overtime victory against an inferior opponent, a game that they normally tend to let the fans down in, was big.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you talk about this Rice. You talk about an inferior opponent. Rice is now 0-5, but you look at that non-conference schedule that they've played. They've played Army, who's arguably, easily, probably a top 8 G5 program. They've played Wake Forest, who's undefeated for the first time in probably 30-plus years. Baylor's undefeated as well. We know how good Texas is. So it was a team coming in like they'd been challenged, and you could tell that early on in the game. Mike Bloomgren, granted, he's only 2-16 as the head coach at Rice, but I feel like they're really close to, you know, not only winning one game, but clicking and making some noise in the West Division. It's not going to surprise me. I think they're going to have something to say in Conference USA here down the stretch.
There's no question about that. They're one of the best 0-5 teams in the country, I think. And, I mean, they showed that on the first two drives, right? And I think we're going to touch on this later, but they really had the Bulldog defense guessing on those first two drives with two opening touchdowns.
Yeah, they just punched Tech in the throat, and it seemed like repeatedly in that first half. And we'll, like you said, we'll talk about that in the next segment. We'll really get into recapping Rice and what it took for Louisiana Tech to win a hard-fought road game. But I think we want to congratulate Skip Holtz. His 50th win as the Bulldog head coach becomes only the third head coach in Louisiana Tech history to win 50 games. So, nice honor for him as well, but, you know, you have to keep plugging along, keep working towards that goal, like you said, of not only winning Conference USA, but you want to be able to get over that hump and get Louisiana Tech's first 10-win season as a Division I program. So we've got a great show planned for tonight. Nicholas Lewis of the Forgotten Five will join us at 6:45. We'll talk Conference USA. We'll talk some G5 football. I got some interesting things to discuss with Nick Lewis that I've had some interesting thoughts about over the past couple of weeks, and so he'll join us at 6:45. At 7 p.m., Louisiana Tech offensive coordinator Todd Fitch will join the program. Fitch has been at Louisiana Tech for 4 years, and I think he's been pretty instrumental to this point in Jamar Smith really growing up as a senior and playing the best football of his career.
Yeah, there's no question. Jamar has, like I said earlier in the week on BleedTechBlue.com, he's evolved to his final form here at Tech, and it's showing. He's leading the offense down the field. He is he's commanding the offense in a way that he hasn't before. He's patting teammates on the back. He looks like he's really
growing up as a leader.
He's really matured in that regard, and I know that's something that a lot of us have wanted to see from him, and he's shown it. And a lot of that can be attributed to Coach Fitch.
And I think, and I didn't plan to go down this route, but I want to talk about this for a sec. Like, I think it's wrong, and I'm not going to say you can't have these expectations, but to have an expectation of Jamar Smith coming out and throwing for 350 yards and four touchdowns every week, like, it's just not going to happen. No, it's not going to happen. He's not a Tim Rattay. He's not a Luke McCown. He's not a Colby Cameron of his senior year. He's not a Jeff Driscoll. He's not a Ryan Higgins. He's more of a game manager, if that's the term you want to use.
Yeah, and that's not this offense, and I think that's something Coach Fitch would probably tell you
himself. Yeah, and we'll ask Coach Fitch, but I think, you know, there's been some inconsistencies with the offense still. Granted, they've improved a tremendous amount, obviously, at quarterback, but I think a big part of the offense's inconsistencies to this point, outside of the FIU game when Tech rushed for 275 yards, the Bulldogs have just been unable to put together a consistent run game on a down-by-down basis. And when you're 3rd-and-8, 3rd-and-9, I mean, you look at the Rice game, I think Tech was 3 of 12 on third down. Like, you're just not going to convert long third downs week in and week out. And I think that's the biggest reason that offense hasn't taken that next step to 35, 40 points a game. Now, when they put it all together like they did against FIU, you get 43 points, 565 yards. But the biggest thing to me has been the lack of a consistent run game.
Yeah, and like you said, I mean, we saw it last week against FIU when all the pieces come together, everything's working in concert. That passing game opens up for Jamar. The receivers have more space to make plays, and it's a little bit more dynamic. But without that run foundation to build upon, he has to be more of a game manager.
Exactly, exactly. So let's jump into for the remainder of this segment. We've got 8 more minutes left in this segment. A big talk in college football. A law was passed in California, and, you know, this is always a touchy subject. Should players get paid? Should players not get paid? Well, state of California put a law into place beginning in 2023. Players will begin to be able to make money off their likeness. They'll be able to sign agents, get endorsements, whatever it may be. And I have a lot of interesting thoughts about it. I'm sure you do as well, but let me just open up with my thoughts on it. And we can go on about it, about, you know, the pros, the cons, whatever it may be. But I think the biggest thing is, and listen, I played collegiate athletics, so, like, I have no problem if a player wants to make money off the field. Like, I have no problem with it. But I also think there's a ton of negatives to the situation that I'm not going to say everyone in sports media, but you rarely hear it mentioned about all the negatives that come along with it.
On a macro level, it's capitalism, right?
It makes
sense. You know, if I advertise online that I'm going to be at Railroad Park signing autographs, no one's showing up. If Karl Malone does it,
some
people might show up.
Yeah.
It's capitalism, supply and demand. On a macro level, that makes sense. Now, on a micro level, there's some dicey situations that players and donors can find themselves in, which I think you're going to touch on.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you look at this bill, and obviously the bill is really specific. It says, you know, only $10 million in your budget can it apply to. So really, I think it only applies to like 4 schools, like USC, Stanford, you know, the big programs in California. But my thing is this, like, sure, like, do I have any problem with Jamar Smith, like you said, going out to Railroad Park and signing autographs? I don't. But the problem with me, and the biggest thing is, where do we draw the line? Do we draw the line? Like, what if a high school kid decides, hey, I think I should be able to get paid? Like, I mean, I don't have a problem with that either, but, I mean, are you going to let him do it? You know what I'm saying? And so, or what do you do when XYZ player shows up to sign autographs, one donor shows up and says, you know what, I'll give you $10 million to be on this billboard for my whatever company. Well, can Louisiana Tech offer $10 million? Like, they're not going to be able to. And I think that's – and I get it. It's for the Power 5 programs. Like, there's no secret to that. But there has to be some sort of way. Do you make the players invest the money and receive it when they get out of college? Or do you say, you know what, Alabama, you got the most money, So you can go pay 85 scholarship players $5 million a year, and you can dominate college football. And it's not that much different than it is now. But, I mean, there's just so many different levels to it. And I know the state of Florida has a bill in motion that will put this in play in 2020. But I just don't know how it's all going to work.
The financial balance of power is already so so askew in college, especially football. And I think you've hit it on the head. It's a Pandora's box. There's a butterfly effect to it that is just impossible to regulate. And I think that's why we've seen the NCAA be so staunch on it over all these years.
Oh, yeah. And you definitely have to understand the NCAA's stance as well. Let's go ahead, jump straight to the Fairway Carts Hotline, joined by Quint. Quint, thanks for joining us tonight.
Ben, I think we're missing a big part of this California thing that no one wants to talk about, and I don't know if they're just not thinking it all the way through or what, but a big proponent and a big reason for California doing this is to help their state budget, because money goes to the players, it's going to be taxable.
That's true. That's a good point.
And that's going to have some sort of income tax or some, I mean, I don't really know how you would classify it. It's basically a contract for services.
Well, and
it's going to have an income tax.
Okay? Well, and I think, too, like a lot of players probably don't realize that. You know that coaches aren't going to bring that up in the recruiting process, you know, in all likelihood. And there's other sides of it. Like, you know, me as a college worker, I can go work at a firm during the school year and make money. But at the same time, I can also be fired from that firm as well. So that opens up another side of it. Do you let coaches, you know, cut scholarships at the drop of a hat? It's just so many different questions, I feel like, that need to be answered.
And also, I think if when this starts getting closer to home and you start getting some determinations from other states, that's going to affect it, because as a citizen of Louisiana, if USC comes to play LSU, can I legally say that USC player earned part of his endorsement by playing in Louisiana, and does it taxable?
Exactly.
For us too?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, if you look at the state of Texas, no state income tax. You know, do they get a recruiting advantage there? There's just so many different layers to it, which I get, you know, some of this stuff is being discussed behind the scenes, obviously, but it's just, it just seems that it's not made publicly by the sports media that allows you to really understand, as a 17 or 18-year-old kid, all the different complexities that come with it.
I think what it comes down to, and this may be a total oversimplification, but it's easier to say no than yes, but.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And parents across the world know that. It's easier to say no across the board than to say yes, but extenuating circumstance X, extenuating circumstance Y. And I think that's why the NCAA has just always prohibited it.
And also, here's another thing we can look at. If this stuff goes into effect in more states than California, what does that do for the XFL, who has basically came out and said that we're not going to have the NFL rule where you have to wait 3 years to come play in our league? We're a separate league that's not going to have that rule, so we're going to go after the big-name talent with big-dollar contracts.
Yeah, and I think that's been the... Go ahead.
Well, does that basically scoop off the very upper-level talent and leave the colleges with B and C level talent?
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. I think the easiest thing, if the NCAA wanted to just get out of it, they would have to form some sort of partnership with the NFL and the NBA and just say, hey, if a kid wants to play when he's 18 in the NFL or even the XFL, like you say, like they can go ahead and come on. Because I can tell you, there's not many 18-year-olds that are physically developed enough to go into the NFL and be able to play. So that's going to obviously kill some of their likeness, so to speak, and they'll learn in a real hurry that it's probably better off for them to come, you know, go ahead and come to college. So great call,
right,
Quint. We certainly appreciate you joining us tonight.
All right, thanks, man.
But, you know, like we said, there's so many different layers to it, and it's just not as simple. It's not just as black and white as people make it. And then you throw in Title IX, you know, what if the quarterback's making, you know, $100,000 a year and the softball player's getting $15, you know there's going to be a lawsuit that comes down at some point. There's just so many different layers to it, but it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out. I don't have any doubt that at some point players are going to get some sort of compensation. It's become clear that not only the players, but, you know, lawmakers across the country are no longer satisfied with, you getting a $150,000 scholarship over 4 years, you getting 45 shirts, 45 pairs, you know, whatever it is, free meals, that's no longer good enough. And, like, that's fine, but it's just going to be extremely difficult to regulate.
And, yeah, I totally get it from the perspective of the athlete. If you're Zion Williamson at Duke,
you want to be able to make some money.
You're walking down the streets of Durham and your jersey's in the window for $70.
Exactly.
That's frustrating to see.
Absolutely. So let's go ahead and take our first time out. When we come back from the break, we're going to recap Louisiana Tech's 23-20 overtime victory over the Rice Owls. You're listening to Bleed Tech Blue Radio, Sports Talk 97.7.
At First National Bank, we are committed to the individuals and communities we serve. We offer personal banking, mortgage lending, commercial lending, and cash management. Let us honor our pledge to be uncommon in all that we do by visiting one of our convenient locations in Arcadia, Ruston, Farmerville, Monroe, and West Monroe, and experience our professional, enthusiastic service. First National Bank, the uncommon bank. Member FDIC.
Walpole Tire and Service has been a proud La Tech supporter for over 60 years. So when the Bulldogs hit the field or hardwood, make sure your vehicle is game ready. Let the staff at Walpole get you safely to and from the game with brake repair, alignments, and computer diagnostics, plus all major brands of tires, including Goodyear, Michelin, and BF Goodrich. Walpole Tire and Service, a name you can trust. Ruston and West Monroe. Visit WalpoleTire.com.
Bulldog fans, this is Chris Brister from Brister's Smokehouse, and I'd like to invite you to our new location, 1420 Cooktown Road in Ruston, across the street from our old location. Stop in and try our famous scatter load on your choice of four different types of bread. Our barbecue nachos are piled high with your favorite type of meat, and you have to taste for yourself our tender and juicy smoke-cooked chicken, my personal favorite. So whether you're in town or at a Tech game or just in the mood for the best barbecue in town, come see us at Brister's Smokehouse, 1420 Cooktown Road in Ruston.
The Bleed Tech Blue Radio Show is brought to you in part by O'Neill Gas. O'Neill Gas offers propane delivery to homes and businesses throughout North Louisiana. For more information, go to O'NeillGas.com.
Gotta love it. Tech sports, that is. That's why there's Bleed Tech Blue Radio, brought to you by First National Bank. Call or text the show on the Fairway Cards hotline, 888-993-7762.
Welcome back, Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Ben Carlisle, Lane Davison, coming to you live from the Sports Talk 97.7 studios here in Ruston. Lane, Louisiana Tech goes on the road Saturday night. Hard-fought victory, 23-20. Over the Rice Owls. Bulldogs now 4-1 overall in 2019, 2-0 in Conference USA play. And, you know, we want to get into breaking down this game and talking about what Louisiana Tech did right, what Louisiana Tech did wrong. But first, let's jump to the hotline where we're joined by our good friend WFP. How you doing tonight?
BC, nothing but love for you, BC.
Hey, love to hear it.
You love to see it, love to hear it. Hey, tell me about why Jamar is not getting the respect he deserves.
Well, I can tell you one reason. He's not winning enough. If he was 5-0, the fan base would be happier.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt.
What else you got for us tonight?
Well, I mean, he is the reason Tech won the game on Saturday. People need to wake up and pay attention.
Well, hey, let me tell you something, Mr. Chapman.
You're one step ahead of us.
You are one step ahead of us. But let me tell you, if you love Jamar Smith, give him a shout out on the Twitter, and Bully Nation will follow suit.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'll do it right now.
Thanks for the call.
Love you.
So Louisiana Tech, 23-20, overtime victory over Rice. And, Lane, you know, you look at this game, and you talked about it a little bit in the first segment. I think Rice comes out in the opening two drives. They go, I want to say it was 16 plays, 111 yards, and two touchdowns. We've seen this the past couple of weeks of Louisiana Tech not starting extremely strong. And I think you get to this portion of the year, I think it has to be a concern.
Yeah, it's become a concerning trend. And, well, I mean, what do you attribute it to? Is it coaching? Is it lack of preparation? Is it a lackadaisical attitude in the locker room? All that can go back to coaching. But it's put the Bulldogs in some holes, specifically this week against Rice. And really, when the defense is out on the field that much, that early, not only are you digging a hole for the offense, but you're setting yourself up to be tired later on in the game when you need that extra burst of energy on a crucial play.
Well, yeah, and you talk about time of possession. I mean, Rice held the ball for 37 minutes in this game. And, you know, we've seen, you know, we saw the previous week Tech held the ball for 37 minutes against FIU. It makes a difference. It clearly makes a difference. But I think also, you know, I think there's a little bit of a filling out process. And whether you like it or you don't like it, like Taves and I have talked about on the postgame show the other night, like, we're five games into the year. Like, this is what Tech's going to do. Like, they're going to fill you out offensively. They're going to fill you out defensively. And then they're going to try to make some adjustments to beat you. Now, it's to be determined whether that style of play can beat a Southern Miss, beat a North Texas, beat a Marshall, beat a UAB. But to this point, you can certainly say there's some things to clean up. I mean, we saw the game. Like, there's a ton of stuff to clean up.
It wasn't pretty.
But you can't argue with the result.
No, they're 4-1. They're right where we should be. I mean, you look at their schedule before the season, you see Texas, and then you see the four games that they've won, and you think, okay, week five, they're 4-1.
Exactly.
Well, here they are at 4-1. They've done what they need to do.
Yeah, you're exactly where you thought you'd be.
Yeah, it hasn't looked pretty the whole time, but they're right here where they should be, and we'll see what they can do this week against UMass.
And you know, you talk about the Rice game. Okay, they go 111 yards on 16 plays the first two drives of the game. Tech only gets three possessions in the first half. Now, did the offense put up tremendous numbers in this game? No, they didn't. But when you're only getting three possessions in a half, like, you almost got to score every time you get the ball. But, I mean, it's also difficult. You know, I thought Rice played pretty well defensively. If you go back and watch some of the tape, they were taking away Jamar's initial reads. They were forcing Tech to beat him over the top. But Tech's offensive line was having issues with a smaller Rice defensive line. We've talked about Tech's offensive line. It's big. It can really push you downhill in the run game. But if you're smaller and quicker, they're not the most athletic guys in the world, and they're going to struggle to block you. And I think that's a perfect example of what we saw Saturday night.
Especially around the edges. And
exactly.
I mean, people may roll their eyes at this, but Rice is not a bad team.
Well, and Rice is not a great matchup for Tech either. That style
of
play is, I'm not going to say it's Tech's kryptonite because they won, but it's an extremely tough style to play against, especially in today's college football where you don't see it a whole lot.
No question. And like I said in the first segment, that is the game that Tech historically loses.
Yep.
And can derail an otherwise promising season.
Yep.
For them. Those are the plays that they don't make in crunch time, in the fourth quarter, in overtime, that they made on Saturday night. And that's something that they should be proud of and that they should take to next, well, after the bye week, to UMass and
yep.
And see what they can do.
Yeah, and, you know, I talked about, you know, 111 yards on 16 plays, two touchdowns the first two drives. I talked about Tech wanting to make some adjustments there going forward. Well, you look at the last 43 minutes of that game, Rice scored 6 points. They only had 227 total yards. You know, they had the, I thought, you know, the INT by Darryl Lewis at the goal line.
Game changer.
Oh, right before the half was huge. It was a huge momentum change of play. And I know Tech didn't immediately score coming out of the half. Rice got the ball again and missed another field goal. But if you're down 21-7 at the half against a team that was moving the ball, it's, you know, 3 yards in a cloud of dust, 14 feels like 28.
No question. Even 17-7.
Yeah.
It's a two-score game.
It's a
total game changer. And, you know, Tech, we've seen them come up with some of those plays when their back was against the wall. I think of the goal line punch-out fumble against FIU on
yep.
the opening drive touchdown that they were about to score. They've come up with those bend-but-don't-break plays at the right time so far this year, and that's credit to the
defense. I want to ask you this. You talk about the bend-but-don't-break plays. Is being good in the red zone, is that a skill, or is it a lot of it luck, bad opponents? Like, I just don't know what I think.
I think I'm right there with you. I think a lot of times it's dumb luck. A lot of times you get the right guy in the right place at the right time and happens to catch a piece of the ball, and the ball comes out and you recover the fumble. And stuff like that happens, and you can't necessarily quantify it. There's a huge variance between those type of plays on that area of the field. And a lot of times you just need those coin flips to go your way.
Yeah, and they've certainly gone Tech's way this year.
And they haven't historically.
No, yeah, and it's gone their way in some close games. You know, the Grambling game came down to an onside kick that Tech did not get. You know, the Rice game comes down to a, you know, overtime. So Tech's certainly been fortunate to this point in the year, and maybe this is the year where Tech gets all the breaks, whereas, like you said, we haven't seen it in the years past. But looking at the second half, you know, Tech trails for 14-7, you know, until late in the third quarter. Jamar puts together a 7-play, 76-yard drive. Justin Henderson caps that off with a 26-yard touchdown run to tie it. And then we get into the fourth quarter. Rice goes on one of their patented 7 to 8 minute drives. They drive it down and they get into the red zone. I think it was 3rd and 9, and they run the football, and you're like, well, they're about to go for it again on fourth. I think they had one fourth down conversion earlier in the drive, and they decide to kick the field goal, which shocked me after seeing their first field goal. I think their long coming into the game was like 28 yards, so like, they clearly don't have a kicker.
I think their long on the season was
28. Yeah, 28, it was short.
So,
but yeah, and so they kick the field goal. They go up 17-14, and then I thought things started to shift. You saw a shift in how Holtz called the plays. Tech goes up tempo in the final 2 minutes. Jamar hits Hardy on a 22-yard corner route. He hits Powell on another 22-yard corner route the next play. Great catch by CJ on the sideline. Gets Tech, and then CJ makes another play on a bubble screen to get Tech down to the 12. Jamar then fires 3 incompletions into the end zone. Hale connects on the 31-yard field goal, and we're set for overtime. Now, I think it was Tech's first overtime win since 2011. We all remember the Southern Miss overtime game 2 years ago. College overtime, I don't like the rules at all. You put them on the 25, like, you should score every time.
You should at least get 3.
Yeah, every time, which we see so many times teams don't. But Rice gets a field goal on their first drive. Holtz comes out the next Tech offensive possession. Jamar takes a read option for 8. Justin Henderson picks up a 3rd and 2 with a 4-yard run out of the big bone. And then Jamar caps it off with a 12-yard TD run on a quarterback draw. You certainly have to feel good for him. It wasn't the best game he's played. He finished 21 of 39 for 210 yards. Obviously, the touchdown to Hardy in the first quarter, another touchdown to end the game. But you have to feel good for him to be able to put a game away.
Yeah, and that's what fans have been complaining about in Jamar's career so far. Those late moments
when it's on the line.
When it's on the line and when you're not playing as well as you think you could have, and it's a human tendency to hang your head, to fold up the tent, and to go home. He completes those 2 big 20-plus yard passes to tie the game, and then has a walk-off touchdown scramble. I don't know what anyone else can ask for in that moment.
Yeah, he got it done when it mattered. He basically willed his team to victory.
No question.
And you can say that, you know, Powell made a great play on the sideline, but guess what? He made the throws when he had to make the throws, and he ran with some physicality. And we've seen when he wants to run the football, he'll run you over. And he seems to feed off of that. And we didn't see Tech use him a whole lot in the run game. But, you know, coming out of this game, and we talked about in the first segment, my big concern continues to be the run game. When you have only 84 yards on 22 carries and 26 of those come on one play, like, the run game has to figure out a way to, when they hand it up to middle to Dancy or Henderson or Tucker when he returns, you have to be able to get 4 and 5 yards a pop.
Yeah, what is it? Was it 2.6?
2.6 without the long touchdown run.
Without the long touchdown run. That's not going to set up your passing game for success. That's not going to help your quarterback in those moments. And that's not going to entertain the fans in the way that they want to. When you're getting 2 yards a pop, those safeties are going to start coming down into the box.
They're going to force you to beat them over the top.
And that's what fans want to see, and the running game is the start. And so far we haven't seen it except for against FIU.
And we have a text on the text line. Were there many screens? Felt like we did use that well against FIU and just didn't see them against Rice until the end. And I think a big part of the screen game is They love to use the screen game in the hurry up. When they're getting first downs, when they're moving the chains, they love to flick it outside, let Hebert or Powell or Smoke or whoever it is pick up 5-6 yards and stay ahead of the chains. But to me, you know, offensively, Tech also had some issues with drops. I know Hardy had an easy drop. Stanley had a drop about 30 yards down the field. Powell had a drop on that last drive that Tech was trying to go in for the touchdown lead in regulation. The receivers were inconsistent in this one, but the big thing is if Tech can get the run game going, keep the chains moving, it's going to allow them to use more of those bubble screens, keep things moving. And really, the bubble screens, I don't necessarily think that they're called plays. I think they're going up and they're saying, well, 8 guys are in the box. We think we can block you on the outside. And that's what they try to do. And you talk about C.J. Powell. He's, you know, Tech's leading receiver, which surprises me, and we'll talk about him in the next segment. But, you know, he's so good at the bubble screens at picking up 6 or 7 yards. So I think Tech's got to be able to establish that run game, and that has to be a focus in the bye week and moving forward into UMass next week. So let's go ahead, take our next time out. When we come back from the break, we're going to break down a little report card for the Dawgs after 5 games. We certainly appreciate you listening. Bleed Tech Blue Radio, Sports Talk 97.7.
Have you looked at the calendar? The seasons are changing, and fun season is almost here.
You mean fall season?
Nope, fun season. Because any season is more fun with a new EasyGo golf cart from Fairway Carts in Minden. With an EasyGo that perfectly fits your lifestyle, you'll have fun at the football games. Fun with the family on a camping trip or riding around the neighborhood. Even have fun in the woods during hunting season. And Fairway Carts always has a great selection of EasyGo gas or electric carts with the performance you need and the value to please any budget. Experience the comfort of an EasyGo personal cart, the convenience of a multi-passenger cart, or the rugged durability of an EasyGo utility cart. Yes, fun season is coming, and it's going to be your new favorite season of the year. It all starts with a new EasyGo from Fairway Carts in Minden on Highway 531, just north of I-20. Give them a call at 318-371-CART.
Uncommon. How would you describe it? Would it be above the ordinary? Outstanding? Exceptional? First National Bank, the Uncommon Bank, is above the ordinary. An outstanding bank dedicated to exceptional customer service, trust, and courtesy. First National Bank, we promise to be uncommon in all the things we do. Member FDIC.
Got a lot of stuff? Ideal Portable Buildings has what you need. A new custom-built portable building, built with quality materials at low prices no one will beat. Ideal also carries Dirksen portable buildings in all sizes, from a garden shed to a lofted barn cabin. And keep all your stuff covered with a new Eagle Carport from Ideal. Rent to own with no credit check and 12 months same as cash with approved credit. Find Ideal Portable Buildings on Facebook or call 699-9426.
Time to keep up with Louisiana Tech sports the way you'd like to? No worries, just listen to Bleed Tech Blue Radio, brought to you by First National Bank. Call or text the show on the Fairway Carts hotline, 888-993-7762.
Welcome back, Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Ben Carlisle, Lane Davison, coming to you from the Sports Talk 97.7 studios. Tapes, you're going to like this. Beck texts in on the hotline, Fairway Carts hotline. I'll say this, five games in, call me Beck Frost. It's time for a poem. Jamar gonna Jamar.
Beck Frost.
We'll call him Beck Flake. Oh, that sound. Text on the text line from Justin. Could we expect our lack of rushing yardage to drastically change Tech's recruiting? I don't think so. I think, you know, you look at the type of running backs Tech's recruiting, they're certainly recruited to fit the style of play, which is a spread attack. But I think the biggest thing is, and Skip has mentioned this in the past, he's got to do a better job at giving his offensive linemen a better chance at success. Like I said, this offensive line isn't the most athletic offensive line in the world. They're better at just running at you straight downhill. So hopefully that's an adjustment they make for the second part of the year to just go to more straight downhill run game and allow those guys to take advantage of some of their strength. But, you know, looking at this Louisiana Tech team, we talked about, you know, 4-1, 2-0 in Conference USA. You know, at worst, I think fans would have predicted 3-2, 1-1.
Yeah.
But, you know, 4-1 had to be the expectation when you look at the FIU game being at home. So let's look at the offense. You know, offensively, Tech's averaging 27 points a game, you know, 423 yards a game. Jamar's throwing it for 277 yards a game. And just talking about Jamar in specific, he's completing 65% of his throws, you know, 6 touchdowns, 2 picks. He's running it, I would say, a little more. I hope to see him unleashed here in the second part of the year. But I would say through the first 5 games, he's definitely taken a couple of steps forward, and he's playing some really solid football at the quarterback position.
There's no doubt, and I don't want to reiterate a lot of the same stuff we've already said, but, I mean, Jamar has totally come into his own in his senior season. He's, until last week, he wasn't necessarily winning games, but he also wasn't losing games.
And which, I think that means something.
Yeah, it's something that fans have been critical of him in the past. And last week, he willed the team to victory against an inferior opponent in a game that Tech doesn't always come out on top in. And that's something to be said for. So.
And, you know, talking about Jamar and talking about the rest of the offense, I think you couple the offensive line and the running backs together. For me, I've been, I don't know if disappointed is the right word for the running back position, but just unfulfilled. You talk about Jaquese Dancy. We know how much talent he has, and Tech obviously limited his role early in the year, but he's yet to really get it going. He's yet to really bust that big one. You know, he's got nearly 200 yards and 2 touchdowns, but I'm really waiting for him to bust out. Now, you look on the opposite side, Justin Henderson, he had the fumble problems early in the first 3 games, but the last 2 weeks, he's running hard. He's that guy that you need to run between the tackle and get those tough yards, and I think he's doing a pretty good job. But we need a guy that's going to figure out a way, along with the offensive line, that's going to figure out a way to get 5 yards a carry week in and week out. You know, really on a down-by-down basis, more or less.
Yeah, I mean, Henderson has been that bowling ball guy, the one that Tech has had in the past that they've had success with, the Boston Scott, the Hunter Lees of the world. He fits that mold, and that's something that Tech needs. And maybe if that can continue, it'll open up a little bit more space for Dancy to play a little bit more
to the
finesse
edge, yeah,
and around the edge game.
Yeah, and you look at the offensive line, what have been the major issues? You know, I thought coming into the year, I thought right tackle was a major hole with Dwight Stallworth. Now, he struggled in the opener against Texas, but I would say the two tackles, him and Willie Allen, have been really good the last 4 games. I think Willie Allen's the best tackle Tech's had in quite some time, maybe since Jordan Mills 7 or 8 years ago. Willie Allen's playing extremely well, and you can certainly see why he signed with LSU out of high school. But the biggest issue to me on the offensive line has been the two guards. When you talk about Drew Kirkpatrick and Ethan Reed, and they're good players, they're guys that can do the job. They've just been inconsistent and haven't really opened up some big lanes. They've made some mistakes in pass protection. Tech's been sacked 11 times in the first 5 games, which it's not terrible, but when the pass protection has been bad, it's been really bad. It's not just been mediocre. And so that's the big thing for me is the two guard spots on the offensive line need to get things cleaned up. I know Josh Moat's rotating in there as well. But if the two guards can pick up their level of play, I think you can see this run game start to come together. But like we said, we need to see it for consecutive weeks before we can truly buy into it.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question. Like you said in the last segment, they're not the most athletic guys.
No, they're not.
They're not gonna push guys 5-10 yards backwards.
They're not gonna set combine records for the 40-yard dash.
No, but can they be serviceable linemen?
I think they can.
Absolutely. Should they be protected in this offense? And should they be set up for success? Absolutely.
I think so. And so shifting to the final part of the offense, you look at the receivers. Like I mentioned, I think the big surprise to me has been the play of C.J. Powell. You know, coming into the year, I really thought that Smoke Harris was going to outplay him and earn that spot in the slot. But Powell's playing really well. He leads the team with 25 catches, has 268 yards, which is second on the team behind Adrian Hardy. You know, Smoke has played a role more in the speed sweep type game. I know he's gotten credit for 19 catches, but I've been extremely impressed with the play of C.J. Powell. And I might be wrong about this, but I really – and it's been better the last 2 weeks, but I really feel like we haven't seen Adrian Hardy truly get going yet.
No, we haven't. Not to the level that we saw last year that filled fans with so much promise about him maybe stepping into the shoes of that number one receiver Tech
had
in the past.
And he is
the
best
Patton.
Receiver. Yeah.
He's the best and most talented receiver on the team, but we just haven't seen that explosiveness from him yet.
Yeah, exactly. And there's been too many drops on the outside. And I know a lot of teams are rotating coverages towards him. They're giving him a lot of bump and runs, and they're taking away some of the slants that he was so good at a year ago. But if Tech can get, you know, not only him to step on, up on the outside, but Isaiah Graham on the other side. We've seen the big play that Graham had down the field against Bowling Green, but he hasn't truly got involved in the offense yet. And, you know, the more those outside receivers become threats, maybe that opens up something in the middle of the field for the run game.
No doubt. And on the other side of the ball, the most explosive player on the defense, Amik Robertson, we haven't seen his true form yet this year. You know, James Morgan really picked on him against
FIU. And you talk about the defense, and, you know, is Amik struggling? Is the secondary struggling? Or is it a result of the defensive line not getting any sort of pressure? I think that's the big thing that I'm kind of debating with, because – you see, and we see it every week, Bob Diaco needs to bring more pressure. Well, you can't bring five or six guys every snap because you can't leave your corners in man coverage every play. But Tech has to figure out a way to get some pass rush too, you know, up front with three or four guys.
Yeah, you feel the miss of Jalen Ferguson.
You're definitely feeling it, yes.
You're feeling the miss of him. Amik hasn't played his potential. Hardy, like we talked about. The running game isn't where it needs to be, and here Tech is
4-1,
well, despite all of that.
Yeah, and that's a great point. You know, there's like you said, there's so many different things that you can clean up. Willie Baker has yet to sack the quarterback, and you know, after we saw him in the Hawaii Bowl last year, everyone coming in this year was like, "Oh, he'll get 10 sacks." I mean, we saw how much talent he has, but the defensive line, to me, look at just shifting to the defensive side. You talk about the front four of Baker, Mason, Wallace, and Williams. They've only combined for 8 tackles for loss and 2 sacks in 5 games. None of the sacks have came from Willie Baker. Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I expect Kadarian Mason to have 7 sacks. I don't, but there's ways that you can impact the game by pushing the pocket to force a quarterback to get rid of the ball and make him uncomfortable back there, which in turn allows Amik Robertson to step in front of a ball like he did against Bowling Green, or not get beat down the field after he's been covering for 5 or 6 seconds. And, you know, that's just how the defense has performed to this point. So you talk about the linebackers, and they're the final group we'll touch on, but I think James Jackson's been good. He's had some issues containing running backs and containing quarterbacks trying to get out of the pocket, but the big player for me at linebacker's been Connor Taylor.
No question.
He's playing so much better than he played a year ago, which I don't know, coming into the year I expected it, but week in and week out, if you're watching a Tech linebacker, he's the guy that you see making plays. So that's kind of where we think things stand after 5 games. Obviously, Tech's 4-1, 2-0 in Conference USA play, exactly where they need to be with 7 games remaining in the season. Let's go ahead, take our next time out. We come back from the break, we'll be joined by Nick Lewis from the Forgotten Five. We'll talk some G5 football. You're listening to Bleed Tech Blue Radio, Sports Talk 97.7.
At First National Bank, we have a strong team of bankers who are dedicated to meeting the needs and dreams of our customers. With competitive rates, tailored loans, and exceptional customer service, your experience with us is sure to be like no other. We invite you to come tailgate before every Louisiana Tech home game. First National Bank. We are the uncommon bank. Visit us online at fn.bank. Member FDIC.
Walpole Tire and Service has been a proud La Tech supporter for over 60 years. So when the Bulldogs hit the field or hardwood, make sure your vehicle is game ready. Let the staff at Walpole get you safely to and from the game with brake repair, alignments, and computer diagnostics, plus all major brands of tires, including Goodyear, Michelin, and BF Goodrich. Walpole Tire and Service, a name you can trust. Ruston and West Monroe. Visit WalpoleTire.com.
DQ fans, your favorite chicken strips just got a sweet BFF. It's the DQ Chicken and Waffle Basket, a next-level chicken strip basket with 100% all-white meat chicken strips paired perfectly with a sweet Belgian waffle, plus fries and syrup. It's a treat and an eat, and it's totally delicious. Try the sweet and savory chicken and waffle basket today. And don't forget your Blizzard, only at your DQ. Happy tastes good.
Get ready for a healthy dose of Louisiana Tech sports. Bleed Tech Blue Radio, brought to you by First National Bank, is back on the radio. Call or text the show on the Fairway Cards hotline, 888-993-7762.
Welcome back. Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Ben Carlisle, Lane Davison, coming to you live from the Sports Talk 97.7 studios. Joining us next on the Fairway Cards hotline, Nicholas Lewis of the Forgotten Five. Nick, how are we doing tonight?
Doing good. How are you guys doing?
Oh, pretty good. Certainly want to thank you for ironing out some time for us tonight. Nick, when you look at Conference USA to this point, I think the fair thing to say is the league might be better than the MAC, but not much more than that. What are your thoughts on the league to this point in the season?
I can agree with that. There's been some weird stuff going on. I think we can all agree, and you guys from firsthand experience, that Rice has definitely finally kind of turned the corner and made enough improvement for it to kind of show up on the field on a game-to-game basis. And the top of the conference doesn't feel like it's really separated itself out. So that's the one way in which it's very similar to the MAC. The MAC is notorious for being low-rated, not only because some of the teams are not all that good, but also because the gap between number 1 and number 12 is not all that big. I thought that last week teams like North Texas or UAB might separate themselves. That hasn't happened yet or at all. Don't know yet. But yeah, there hasn't really been a kind of like a real wow moment or in either direction. So it's sort of a giant mess right now. And so that's a little bit something new. And in recent years, we've sort of been like, whether it's UAB or North Texas or even La Tech, you know, early in the season, there have been some like really impressive performances that have sort of set the tone for the rest of the season. But that really hasn't happened. And again, I say yet out of hope, but maybe it won't happen this season.
And you mentioned two teams that I wanted to ask you about. First, North Texas. You know, coming into the year, and it seems like for the past couple of years, they've been the sexy pick to win the West Division, if not win the conference. And Mason Fine certainly deserves all the accolades that he's received. But do you think that the loss of Graham Harrell has played a bigger role than some folks might lead on and didn't, or has a bigger issue been on the defensive side of the ball?
It's probably a little bit of both. You have a situation where it's probably true that maybe it was a scheme thing, maybe it was a comfort thing for Mason Fine. It's always a case where, you know, if you're going to change coordinators, there's going to be a little bit of kind of a transitional hiccup, if you will. And unless it's a situation where, you know, a coordinator leaves and his replacement is a guy who's already been on staff, you're going to have sort of one of those periods of guys feeling each other out, both in practice and then again once sort of the live action football has started to take place. And maybe that's the case with North Texas, but it has also been the case that a little bit of decline on the defensive side has also probably played a little more of a role than we expected. And maybe North Texas is still one of the better teams in Conference USA. Obviously, the early hype of Mason Fine by himself being able to carry this team to greater heights than Conference USA leadership may have been a bit oversold initially, but they're, you know, they still have a chance to be a good team in the conference, and their most of their goals are still on the table. So each of those things has probably played a role, but I don't think it's, you know, really torpedoed anything just yet.
And looking at this UAB team, I'm certainly not going to be one that bets against Bill Clark, but that program lost a tremendous amount of seniors, some older players that had been granted a few extra years by the NCAA. I know the quarterback, Johnston, I know he had the rough week last week against Western Kentucky, but he's obviously very talented. We know about Spencer Brown. We know about Garrett Marino on the defensive line. But, you know, the first true test for UAB was this last week against Western Kentucky. Is Western Kentucky that improved, or has UAB taken somewhat of a step back now that they're kind of playing with the same cards that everyone else is?
I think it's kind of more of a step back by UAB. And it's partly a situation where, you know, teams are starting to kind of get a book a little bit on Tyler Johnston. And he's a talented kid. He's a good athlete. But I don't know that his knowledge of the system is there just yet to sort of counteract whatever it is that teams are throwing at him. I mean, he did a great job on Saturday. You know, he only had like two incompletions. The problem is that he threw four passes to the wrong team. but realistically, you know, a player like that, to some extent, you're going to sort of, you know, take the good with the bad. But they're going to have to work a little harder to sort of balance things out. And it's also the case with Spencer Brown a little bit. You've had a little bit of regression on the offensive line, which has made running a little more difficult with him. But the one thing that's been surprising with me is that Spencer's a good runner. He's not the most, like, dynamic or explosive runner. But UAB has a guy in the backfield in Lucius Stanley who could be that running back. So I'm surprised they haven't done a little more of a 1-2 punch, and maybe that's something that comes later on in the year. And so it's definitely been the case. I mean, even as early as the Alabama State game, the offense has just been underwhelming. And the defense has been good for a few weeks, just good enough to cover over the hiccups the offense was having, but that leash may be gone now. So I think they're at a point now where some tweaks need to be made to sort of exactly what the plan is on offense if they're going to keep using that defense to sort of lead them to the front of the conference.
And shifting to the East Division, and, you know, coming into the year, I think FIU and Marshall were the two favorites. You know, FIU got off to a rough start, you know, losing the Western Kentucky game. I don't think they lose that game if James Morgan plays all four quarters. But the last couple of weeks, I've been really impressed at what Lane Kiffin's done. You know, they go on the road this past weekend, pick up a big road win at Charlotte. It really feels like things are really starting to click with quarterback Chris Robinson.
Yeah, I can really agree with that, and it's kind of been nice to see that one of the two FUs is getting things together. I was actually at their season opener against Tulane, and both that game and since then, it's just been truly fascinating to watch just how kind of lost their offensive line is. They've had difficulty getting any kind of rhythm going on offense in any of their games, and it's kind of kept putting them behind the eight ball. And James Morgan has a big arm, but the talent around him isn't necessarily built for a downfield type of consistently successful downfield passing game. And so they've suddenly find themselves in a situation where as soon as they're down by more than one possession, suddenly things start to get a little sketchy and, you know, certain body parts start to tighten up and maybe that's them getting ahead of themselves. But it's also been equally good. Who knows what to make of Charlotte just yet, right? Scoring a ton of points, which is great to see. It's nice to see Benny LeMay kind of getting some recognition and those guys having success and them at least kind of graduating to that level of no worse than interestingly bad. And I think they might even kind of flirt with the bowl game for most of the season this year. But it's a little early to tell exactly what we've got in FAU. Especially because when it comes to Chris Robinson, sort of what you're seeing now is kind of where everybody expected him to already be. So maybe he's finally arrived, or maybe kind of this is his peak and he's going to regress a little bit. But it's definitely been going to be something interesting to keep an eye on, especially when kind of Shula Bowl time rolls around, so we can see where those two teams have either recovered or regressed to.
And you look at Marshall, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but Isaiah Green definitely had a really solid freshman year, and I think the, you know, expectation, including myself, you expect him to take that next step forward in 2019 and become one of the better quarterbacks in the league. But what I've been seeing down here is it feels like to me he's a lot like Jamar Smith was at Louisiana Tech. You expected him to take that step forward, but it just hasn't fully clicked yet. Am I wrong by thinking that?
I don't disagree with that, and they're very similar when it comes to their game plan. And one of the things I always come back to when it comes to situations like Jamar or Isaiah is that sort of that football variation of the Peter principle, you know, where you can't really know when a guy's peaked until he doesn't keep going. You know, a guy who's great in college and then goes to the NFL and fizzles out. Well, it turns out that what you saw in his senior season was as good as he was going to get. So you can always expect progression and development, but it's not always going to happen. And in some cases, it's a matter of, you know, Isaiah Green hasn't quite turned that corner. Or is it the fact that, you know, he's with less talent now that certain running backs are off the team for as yet unknown reasons? So it's sort of this interplay of has he fully developed? Probably not quite yet, but it's also happening slower than we anticipated. And then how much of that slowdown in his development is him sort of approaching his developmental peak versus the pieces around him sort of adjusting what is possible development-wise? But it's definitely interesting. There's still a I use the term favorite loosely in this conference this year, obviously, but there's still a team to keep an eye on.
And the last question I have before you get out of here, and one of our members at Bleed Tech Blue posed this question today, and I thought it was pretty interesting. You know, you obviously follow a lot of G5 football around the country, and you look at the Mountain West and some of the teams that they've picked up wins over in the non-conference. You know, you talk about a win over Arkansas with San Jose, Hawaii beat Arizona, you know, Nevada beat Purdue. There's been plenty of Power 5 victories. But you look on the other side in Conference USA, they've yet to beat a Power 5 opponent. But, you know, Rice has lost to Texas. They've lost to the best Wake Forest team in years. Tech fell to Texas. You know, Charlotte fell to Clemson, FAU to Ohio State. You know, I get it. You know, Conference USA obviously hasn't won a Power 5 game. Mountain West has won the most Power 5 games in the country. But by looking at those two things, can we really say that, you know, outside of maybe Boise State, that there's a huge talent gap between the two conferences?
There is and there isn't, right? Some of that is, you know, you look at the Mountain West, and recently from the development of, because for a long time the Mountain West was Boise State and occasionally probably San Diego State and maybe a third team. And sort of the conference itself has finally improved to, you can definitely say, Boise is good and Utah State is good and Hawaii is good-ish maybe and Fresno State is good. And so the conference has gotten a lot deeper. But I don't know how much of that is really improvement of talent necessarily, because their recruiting classes aren't leaps and bounds better than they have been in the past. They're still overall, as a conference, recruiting the same talent that they've always been. But I think that there's more of a definite delineation. Like, the Mountain West has a very clear top half of teams that are either very good or pretty good, and then a bottom half in the form of, like, UNLV in New Mexico that's very much lopsided. And to the other direction, not all that different from the way CUSA has been the last few years with, you know, UTEP and Charlotte and Rice and maybe one of the team always kind of being in the bottom there. So I think that Conference USA is almost getting dragged down by its parity a little bit. You know, the best teams haven't really improved, but all of the teams below them have, and that sort of makes the conference more competitive, but makes the conference as a whole look a little bit less successful compared to their G5 compatriots. So I would argue that it's not so much a gap in talent or anything else as much as it is perception. Now, obviously, that perception matters when it comes to money, like TV deals and things like that, but it's also not like Conference USA has just been getting blown off the field by P5 teams every single time they go out there. So they're not far off. They need to kind of get those over-the-hump moments that, oh, we finally got that win. But I don't think the gap is nearly as big as it seems.
Absolutely, Nick. Well, we certainly appreciate you joining us on Bleed Tech Blue Radio tonight. How can our listeners follow your work online?
So they can come to Forgotten 5, that's forgottenonthenumber5.com, or on Twitter at RememberF5.
Absolutely, certainly. Good stuff tonight, Nick. We'll talk to you again sometime soon.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Nicholas Lewis of the Forgotten 5 certainly bringing us some good information on Conference USA and G5 football in general. But we're going to go ahead, take our next time out. When we come back from the break, Louisiana Tech offensive coordinator Todd Fitch will join the program. You're listening to Bleed Tech Blue Radio, Sports Talk 97.7.
The Bleed Tech Blue Radio Show is brought to you in part by O'Neill Gas. O'Neill Gas offers propane delivery to homes and businesses throughout North Louisiana. For more information, go to O'NeillGas.com.
That happens all the time.
Excuse me? No, it doesn't. You always alert me.
My point exactly. Cars that have forward-facing cameras need to be recalibrated when you replace the windshield.
How would I know that?
Most people don't. Next time, take it to Acme Glass and Mirror. They were the first one in the region that could replace your windshield and recalibrate your forward-facing camera. And unlike taking it to a dealership and paying out of pocket, Acme will bill your insurance. It's that easy.
Thanks. I'm going to Acme Glass and Mirror.
At First National Bank, we are committed to the individuals and communities we serve. We offer personal banking, mortgage lending, commercial lending, and cash management. Let us honor our pledge to be uncommon in all that we do by visiting one of our convenient locations in Arcadia, Ruston, Farmerville, Monroe, and West Monroe, and experience our professional, enthusiastic service. First National Bank, the uncommon bank. Member FDIC.
Bulldog fans, this is Chris Brister from Brister's Smokehouse, and I'd like to invite you to our new location, 1420 Cooktown Road in Ruston, across the street from our old location. Stop in and try our famous scatter load on your choice of four different types of bread. Our barbecue nachos are piled high with your favorite type of meat, and you have to taste for yourself our tender and juicy smoke-cooked chicken, my personal favorite. So whether you're in town or at a Tech game or just in the mood for the best barbecue in town, come see us at Brister's Smokehouse, 1420 Cooktown Road in Ruston.
Got a lot of stuff? Ideal Portable Buildings has what you need. A new custom-built portable building, built with quality materials at low prices no one will beat. Ideal also carries Dirksen portable buildings in all sizes, from a garden shed to a lofted barn cabin. And keep all your stuff covered with a new Eagle carport from Ideal. Rent to own with no credit check and 12 months same as cash with approved credit. Find Ideal Portable Buildings on Facebook or call 699-9426.
Injured in an accident? Call Creed & Creed in Monroe for local experienced representation. This is KNBB Dubok Ruston Monroe, 97.7.
Want to find out stuff about Tech sports your neighbor doesn't know? Keep it right here on Bleed Tech Blue Radio, brought to you by First National Bank. Call or text the show on the Fairway Cards hotline, 888-993-7762.
Welcome back, Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Ben Carlisle, Lane Davidson, coming to you live from the Sports Talk 97.7 studios. Let's jump right to the Fairway Cards hotline. We're joined by Louisiana Tech offensive coordinator Todd Fitch. Coach, how are we doing tonight?
I'm doing good, guys. How you doing?
Pretty good. Thanks for joining us tonight. Coach, when you look at this season through five games, obviously you're off to a great start, 4-1, 2-0 in Conference USA. What have you learned most about your offense through the first five games?
Yeah, I think probably the thing that sticks out the most, that we've, you know, kind of developed a identity of playing really well together. I think we have good leadership on that side of the ball, and, you know, we're finding a way to piece it together. We're not perfect yet. We're not a finished product, but we really like the attitude and the way the guys are, you know, kind of hanging together, playing together, and every week we kind of find a different way to get done what we need to get done. And so it's been fun to watch them really grow as a unit and play together.
And you talk about the unit growing together, and I think one of the big reasons the unit has really started to progress has been the play of quarterback Jamar Smith. It's been obvious how much he's grown up from his junior to senior year. It seems like he's really leading the offense. How has he played, and what are some of the areas that you've seen him grow the most from 2018 to 2019?
Well, I think there's a couple things. You know, obviously, like you said, just the normal maturation from a junior to senior. He's played a lot of football for us, obviously, over the course of the last couple of years, so he's seen a lot of it. But I think he's handling success and failures with a more even keel. The thing I've been preaching to him about since last spring is, you know, sometimes you got to forget about yourself and worry more about the other 10 guys out there. And that's hard to do, especially when you're the quarterback, you know, because you take the brunt of the criticism and you take all the praise a lot of times when you don't deserve it. So, you know, we've really tried to focus on the other 10 guys and not ourselves. And fundamentally, I think he's done a better job with his feet. He's got a little bit better base when he's throwing the ball, which has helped his accuracy. And I think he's having fun. It's a senior year, and he's going to go out and play the best he can. And and kind of have no regrets about it, and that's kind of the way he's played the first five games.
And you look at the offense, and you talked about how the unit has found different ways to win week in and week out, and it's pretty obvious when you watch them out there. You can see how much talent's on the field. But looking at the run game in particular, we saw the great effort against FIU, putting up 275 yards on the ground. But for the most part, the unit's been inconsistent week in and week out. Just how important is it for you guys to get some things figured out in the run game so that you can create some of that balance and see that offense click like I know you guys think it can?
Well, that's really critical for long-term success. You know, we always are going to throw the ball. We love to throw the ball here, and we have some good skill players. But, you know, the formula to have a little bit more of a run game involved with the passing game is critical to creating championship seasons, you know, because you need that consistency over a 12-week run. So, we look hard at what the style of runs we're running, you know, the people we're using it with, and in different formations and how we can help things. And, you know, we've got to continue to research those things, and this off week play with a couple things, and hopefully we can be more consistent. Like we said, we've shown flashes of it, but now it's got to be more of a week-to-week thing that we can kind of hang our hat on when we need to.
And you look at the offense a year ago, and you mentioned some of those skill guys on the outside. You know, I want to ask particularly about the receivers. You know, a year ago, it was really the Adrian Hardy and Teddy Ville show, but you look at the offense this year, you got, you know, obviously Hardy's back. You know, C.J. Powell's really began to emerge. Isaiah Graham's playing well, especially blocking in the short passing game. Malik Stanley, Griffin Hebert. It just seems like you guys are a little bit more deep at the receiver spot, and I know that has to give you a little bit more comfort as an offensive coordinator.
Well, no, there's no doubt. That's one of the things is, you know, go week to week. You talk to different coaches and the media people that do our games. We're very fortunate to have a lot of, you know, talented guys. And sometimes you worry about, you know, spreading the ball around and making sure everybody's involved in the game. But to this group's credit now, they've all just kind of kept their heads down and played hard and blocked for each other. And, you know, we've had a couple games where Aiden's been our leading receiver, a couple games CJ, Griffin Hebert. So as the season unfolds, kind of like we talked about with the run game, it's going to be critical to have that depth because injuries and, you know, things that happen during the course of a year, the more depth we have, it's going to allow us to, you know, continue to be successful on each Saturday, you know, as things unfold with, you know, the normal evolution of the season.
And one more question before we get out of here. Obviously, it's a bye week this week. You guys get an opportunity to rest up. Like you said, play with some things offensively, figure out some new things that might work. But what are some of the biggest things y'all are looking to improve on before UMass and some things that y'all need to improve on for the remainder of the year?
Well, we did it hard, you know, especially the first day back in the office this week. It's kind of a quick self-scout, you know, where we're strong, where we're not as strong as we want to be. And really coming out of fall camp, I thought we were a really good protection team. And the quarterback, the backs, the line had done a really good job at Texas even. And we had a couple of games where we had multiple sacks. And it's not just the line. It's sometimes the line, sometimes the quarterback, sometimes the running back. We've got to clean that up. We've had a couple of minus yardage situations on early downs, on some protections. We can't get behind the chains there. So that's one area we need to clean up for sure. And then we need to continue to find ways to develop explosive plays, you know, throwing down the field and getting the ball to the perimeter, some of our ball carriers. Because, you know, to score in long drives, you need one explosive play or two to be successful. And so we've got to continue to research ways and develop ways to get those explosive plays built into the offense.
Absolutely, Coach. We certainly appreciate you taking some time and joining us tonight on Bleed Tech Blue Radio.
I appreciate it, guys.
Louisiana Tech offensive coordinator Todd Fitch joining us tonight on Bleed Tech Blue Radio. And, you know, you hear some of the things that he says.
It's good stuff.
Yeah, and, you know, you obviously talk about Jamar Smith, and we talk about him every week, and that comes with playing the quarterback position. But I think one key thing that I took away is you had to get him to realize that maybe it's not about you. It's about the other 10 guys on the field. And I saw you shaking your head. Like, you can notice that week in and week out, he's able to put plays behind him much better than he has in the past.
A wise person once told me this. I think if it was a coach when I was a kid playing sports, but he told me, nothing's ever as good as it seems, and nothing is ever as bad as it seems. And Jamar seems to understand that, whether consciously or subconsciously this year. He's not getting too high. He's not getting too low. You know, in years past, we've seen him get cocky. We've seen him show a disinterest in picking up his teammates.
Yep.
This year, we've seen him pat teammates on the back. We've seen him Like I said, pick up after a tough game against Rice and make that last final play to win the game. And that's something that that's an intangible factor that helps put you from good to great.
Well, and I think, too, you know, you look at the rest of the offense. If they see their quarterback say, you know what, so what, we're on to the next play. Like, that's a mentality that it kind of you can see it be reflected to the rest of the team. And teams feed off their quarterback, whether you want to say your quarterback's the leader of the team or not, whether he's a captain or not. Players are looking at the quarterback and how he reacts to different situations.
Emotional stability usually leads to positivity, and positivity is contagious from the top down, and Jamar started with it this year.
Yeah, and, you know, you talk about, you know, like Coach Fitch mentioned, you try to figure out some things in a bye week. You try to figure out some areas that you've been successful, some areas that you've been not so successful, and he talked about getting ball carriers to the edge, getting ball carriers to make some big plays, and I think – you know, you talk about Adrian Hardy, and Adrian Hardy's a great receiver. I think he's going to play in the NFL one day. But Adrian Hardy's not a great ball carrier, per se. You talk in years past, great ball carrier. Boston Scott was a guy great with the ball in his hands. Carlos Henderson was great with the ball. You didn't necessarily have to give Carlos Henderson a ton of room to run. He can make a big play. Kenneth Dixon was a good ball carrier. And this offense, I think they have some good ball carriers. I mean, Smoke Harris is a good ball carrier. C.J. Powell is not the fastest ball carrier, but he's a guy that can make you miss in space. You know, Wayne Toussaint, we saw him get a little bit involved in the Rice game with two catches. Jaquiz Dancy's a great ball carrier. I think it was the home game against Grambling where he didn't play, you know, a lot of the first half. They hand him the ball, and it seems like he's going to get tackled for loss, and he bust it for 45 yards, and it's like, those are the type plays, those big plays where you make a guy miss and you're off to the races that we need to see out of the explosive ball carriers. And hopefully, you know, a week from now or 2 weeks from now when Tech plays UMass, we see some bigger plays, not only in the run game but in the pass game as well.
There's no doubt. And I don't want to pile on to the run game. We've been fairly critical of it tonight. But if you do start to see 5, 6, 7 yards a pop, it's going to commit, the defense is going to have to commit more guys in the box to stop it. And that's going to open up space on the edges for the explosive players to do what they do.
Absolutely. And so, you know, this offense, and, you know, we're talking about the offense only in this segment, but this offense has talent. And the offensive line, like Willie Allen's playing well, Dwight Sowers been good at tackle. If they can get some average play at the guard spots. We know what Cody Russey is at center, an all-conference performer. If the offensive line can hold up, and Fitch talked about that, they've had breakdowns in the offensive line. It's been on the quarterback. It's been on the running back as well. But if they can protect their quarterback, give Jamar plenty of time to throw, Fitch talked about he's got a better base. Maybe his better base has led from him going from 57% to 65%. And now you give him that extra split second to throw, maybe you start to see some bigger plays in the passing game, letting him attack the field, you know, or attack down the field more. But, you know, we've seen, especially at Bowling Green in that first half, Tech wanted to take their deep shots, but they were just unable to do so because they couldn't hold up on the offensive line. And so if you get some of those things ironed out, and I think this bye week comes at a perfect time. You're 4-1, you're 2-0, you're feeling good about yourselves, but you haven't dominated any opponents. But you can clean it up, and then you got a 1-4 UMass. It'll probably be 1-5 after FIU this week. But before you jump into the gauntlet of conference with Southern Miss and UNT and some of those teams like that.
No question. And all due respect to UMass, but like you said, that having that primer game.
Yeah, we don't want to call it a tune-up, but like it is what it is.
It's a primer game going into a game that, let's face it, everyone in Ruston and abroad that supports Tech has not seen too many victories in against Southern Miss Golden Eagles. So that's a big one for Tech to get back into conference play.
Absolutely. So let's go ahead. Let's take our final timeout of the night. We come back from the break. We'll put a bow on it. You're listening to Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Sports Talk 97.7.
DQ fans, your favorite chicken strips just got a sweet BFF. It's the DQ Chicken and Waffle Basket, a next-level chicken strip basket with 100% all-white meat chicken strips paired perfectly with a sweet Belgian waffle, plus fries and syrup. It's a treat and an eat, and it's totally delicious. Try the sweet and savory chicken and waffle basket today. And don't forget your Blizzard. Only at your DQ. Happy tastes good.
Uncommon. How would you describe it? Would it be above the ordinary? Outstanding? Exceptional? First National Bank, the Uncommon Bank, is above the ordinary. An outstanding bank dedicated to exceptional customer service, trust, and courtesy. First National Bank, we promise to be uncommon in all the things we do. Member FDIC.
If you've been waiting for just one more good reason to buy a new EZ-Go from Fairway Carts in Minden, here it is. New EZ-Go carts from Fairway Carts are available with lithium batteries. That means a much longer battery life, which means more time for you to be out having fun on your EZ-Go. From a standard golf cart to the big 4 and 6 passenger carts for the whole family, EZ-Go is the industry leader in lithium battery technology. Their batteries are 100% maintenance-free, deliver consistent performance with a longer life and much quicker charging time than conventional batteries. And best of all, they come with an unprecedented 8-year battery warranty. Don't wait any longer. You've got all the reasons you need to buy a new EZ-Go from Fairway Carts in Minden. Come see the big selection in the showroom on Highway 531 just north of I-20 or call 318-371-CART.
Don't have time to keep up with Louisiana Tech sports the way you'd like to? No worries. Just listen to Bleed Tech Blue Radio, brought to you by First National Bank. Call or text the show on the Fairway Carts hotline, 888-993-7762.
Welcome back. Bleed Tech Blue Radio, Ben Carlisle, Lane Davis, and John Tabor running the board. It's been a good show tonight, Lane.
Loved it. Good to be here, always.
Yeah, absolutely. Bet got Wally pipped. Hope he isn't too upset about it.
He'll be all right. He's got a poem to work on.
That's true, Beck Frost. But, you know, and we've talked throughout the show, Louisiana Tech's 4-1, 2-0. It's a bye week. And you look at, really, and I don't want to put a jinx on it, but you look at the health of this team, it's been pretty good. You haven't had an offensive lineman miss a game. Outside of Israel Tucker at running back, you haven't had an offensive player miss a game that's a key contributor. On the defensive line, Kevin Murphy returned from his foot injury against Rice, and you haven't had any more injuries. Really, you have to be extremely satisfied heading into a bye week, but I think you need to be careful as well. Make sure you back off a little bit, allow the guys to rest up, play hard for 2 weeks, and you get another bye week.
Yeah, and like you said, they've had as good of injury luck as they've had in any year in the last recent memory. But crucially, on the both lines, D-line, O-line, for a school like Tech, losing one of those guys
it's tough.
It's hard to overcome because there's just not the depth that you see at the Power 5 level that you can plug and chug those positions.
Well, and I think especially when you look at, you know, and granted, Tech's defensive line isn't the deepest unit. You know, we're seeing Willie Baker and Milton Williams and Courtney Wallace and Kendarian Mason. Those guys are playing 65, 70 snaps a game, but you talk about some of that depth. I think it's even more important on the offensive line because you look at Tech's two tackle spots, Willie Allen and Jawight Stallworth. Those are two guys coming into the year. I know Stallworth missed last year and Allen didn't play a lot, but they had some experience. Now, behind them, if one of those guys go down, you got Byron Russell, a redshirt freshman. He's played a little bit this year. Or you have Anton Lewis, came in from a junior college as a redshirt sophomore, and he's played a little bit, but you're really only four deep at tackle, so you need to stay healthy. And like you said, like offensive line, defensive line at Tech's level, it's tough to overcome some injuries. Yeah, and there's going to be some.
You lose those A guys, and I don't want to say it's a wrap, but it leaves a significant hole. And I mean, we've talked about in today's show how Tech has struggled to get to the quarterback from the defensive line position and struggled to block on the edges from the O-line position, and that's as is. That's with full health. So Fingers crossed that one of those guys doesn't go down.
And Lane, I got a good question for you. Now, we talked about this the other night on the postgame show. Now, Tech's 4-1, they're 2-0. You look at the Texas game, you lose 45-14. You've come back, you've won four in a row. Granted, you know, outside of Bowling Green, none of the victories were particularly, I'm not going to say not impressive, they weren't convincing. You know, they were games that Tech really had to compete deep into the fourth quarter. And against Rice, in Rice's case, they had to win in overtime. So you look at this team, you're satisfied, they're 4-1, they're 2-0. But after five games, I feel like we got a good gauge on this team and what they are. Is it time for fans to say, you know what, this team's not going to score 40 points a game. They're going to win ugly. It's not going to be the most pleasing style of play to the eyes, but it's time to embrace it.
Yeah, embrace the identity. Be the tough to play against team, the ugly team, the villain, if you will, of the conference. Embrace that role.
Have a little bit of an edge to you.
Yeah, have an edge and embrace not being the flashy team, and come out and support this team because they're good. They're going to win some ball games. We've already seen them win four. So
yeah, and I think that's the thing. And like I think that I want them to score 40 points a game. I want them to allow 17 points a game, but do I expect it weekend? Like, for the remainder of the year, will you hear me come in and say, Tech's going to beat UMass 45-17? No, I'm not, because I think probably the UMass game's going to be 31-20. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
it's just
yeah.
Time to embrace who this team really is. Let's jump to the Fairway Carts Hotline, where we're joined by Jason. Jason, thanks for joining us tonight.
What's up? I've been listening. I just thought I'd call in right here before you get off. So my question is, do they have to play ugly, or can they play faster on offense? It seemed like
that's a good question.
When they finally went up tempo in the third quarter, early fourth quarter, they went down and scored real easily the other night against Rice.
Yeah.
But they waited till the end of the game to go up tempo. But my thought has always been that Jamar excels in the up tempo style. They play some of it at Texas, and they move the ball pretty well. You know, Friday night, the other week against Florida International, they mixed it up a little bit more on offense, and they seemed to get everybody involved, and the offense went a little smoother. But it seems like at times they decide to play slower, and I'm just wondering why that is, and why don't they try to speed things up a little more, because Jamar seems to do a lot better in those circumstances.
We saw
it in the SMU bowl game and in other games too, like LSU.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good question. But, you know, the one thing I think about is, and I haven't studied it, so I don't know the answer to it, but when they're playing ahead of the chains, when they're in second and four, second and two, or third and three, third and four, is that when they choose to go up tempo? Do they slow things down against a Rice team because they were in second long and third and long so often? I don't know. And I think against FIU, I think you saw them go more up tempo because they were getting so many first downs in that game, and it allowed them to really get into a rhythm. So I just wonder if they want to establish that rhythm before they actually get into that up-tempo style of stuff. And like you said, they could play that from the very beginning, and they may be way better off. But I don't know why they do it, but I just wonder if they like to play more up-tempo when they're in more of a rhythm offensively.
Yeah, and I wonder maybe if they're trying to establish that run early, and then maybe in the second half they say, you know what, let's just start slinging the ball around a little bit. And give up on trying to establish that run.
Yeah, exactly.
So my other thought before I leave, my question to y'all would be, would you rather go 7-5 and finally beat Southern Miss, or go 9-3 and lose to them again? Because if it's me, you know, we got this off week, we got another warm-up game with UMass. I want to beat those suckers. Tech had the lead on them 2 years ago and then kind of sat on the ball and tried to run the clock, and Southern Miss came back. I'd rather go 7-5 and beat them. I'm sick of losing to them.
Would you rather go 9-3 and play for a conference championship, though?
Yeah. Now, okay. I would rather go 7-5 and beat Southern Miss than go 9-3 and still be second place to say North Texas.
Assuming no conference title.
No.
Yeah.
This team has got to go to a conference title again, because it's been a couple of years. You know, obviously that's the goal, but if it's 7-5 or 9-3, doesn't matter which bowl game you go to. Let's be Southern Miss.
I can see that side.
You take the passionate, the emotional win over the moral victory. I got you.
That's good stuff, Jason. We certainly appreciate you calling us tonight.
Of course. See ya.
That's a really good question.
Yeah. I think that's kind of emblematic of where a lot of fans are.
7-5 or 9-3.
You grow wary of losing.
I think I'd almost take 9-3 with a chance of getting a 10 in a bowl game.
You would. I think I would too. I mean, nine looks a lot better than 7. No matter who you lose to, no one really remembers.
Just because, to me, like, really only Tech fans and Southern Miss fans care about the rivalry.
Exactly.
The national pundits will be more into the 10-win season,
and
I feel like.
And also a kid, a local kid doesn't care who you lost to. They look at just, oh, this team was 9-3. They won another bowl game.
That's a really interesting question. Man, I don't know. That's a good question. So before we get out of here, let's take a look around Conference USA. Small week for the league. Marshall will travel to Middle Tennessee. Western Kentucky travels to Old Dominion. Western Kentucky's 2-0 in the league. Old Dominion will be playing their first league game of the year. Rice travels to UAB. Could you see the Owls possibly knocking off the Blazers?
I don't know on the road, but
that's a tricky game.
Rice has four letters, not OWLS, it's TARP, and that's trap game for everyone in Conference USA.
They're going to beat somebody.
Yeah, no doubt. There'll be a bad loss for somebody down the stretch.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think UAB opened up as only a 10-point favorite on their home field, and they've won 14 in a row at home. So certainly some respect being given to Rice, and maybe this is the week that Mike Bloomgren's squad finally gets over that hump. UMass travels to FIU in non-conference action. Louisiana Tech will take on UMass next week. FIU will look to get back on track after their loss to Louisiana Tech. They had a bye week this past week. And then in the toilet bowl lane, UTSA and UTEP. If Frank Wilson loses this game, he might lose his job.
Over under on attendance in the toilet bowl.
A dozen? Two dozen?
Might be generous.
Yeah, so certainly some interesting matchups. I think the Marshall trip to Middle Tennessee is an interesting game as well. Middle Tennessee is the team that's kind of in the middle, certainly fighting for a bowl game. We'll really find out what Marshall's made of, I think, going on the road in conference play. So good show tonight. I want to thank Lane Davison for coming in, John Tabor for running the board. We'll be back same time, same place next week. Louisiana Tech and UMass, October the 12th, 6 p.m. kickoff. We'll see you.
Well, that's cool.
Listen for the First National Bank Bleed Tech Blue Radio Show every Tuesday at 6 p.m. with your host, Ben Carlisle. Also brought to you by O'Neill Gas, Brister's Smokehouse, Acme Glass, Dairy Queen, Walpole Tire, and Ideal Portable Buildings. Thanks for listening to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on Sports Talk 97.7.
Around 1999, 2000. When he was trying out for the CBA with hopes of getting to the NBA. And it was a legitimate story on him trying to be a basketball player. And he was a great player for the average person. He was not close to an NBA player. But he was a great, like, just the average dudes out there. He could hoop. But he wasn't on the NBA level. So they brought him in. Toronto, I remember they brought him in. But it was more as a gimmick. I don't think he ever sat on the bench in a real game. But he was on there for a cup of coffee and a sweet roll, as my partner would
say. Hey, I just want to say this. My old television mate, friend, Bernie Smilovitz, who's the main sports anchor at Channel 4 in Detroit, WDIV.
Yep.
He loved the bubble wrap line. He's driving, listening in Detroit. Thank you, Bernie. You get the humor. Let's squeeze one more in. Can we do that?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Joseph in Virginia, you're on the Odd Couple Fox Sports Radio. What you got?
Hey, fellas, how y'all doing?
What's happening?
I will say this. I can agree maybe Dame had a better flow, but let's get to the subject. Chris, you a hip-hop head. Let's get to the subject of the matter. I mean, he said Kobe won Shaq three championships. I mean, 32 and 16.
Right.
It doesn't sound like a championship for me.
What was it, Rodney? I think it was 35-16 in those three finals that Shaq
averaged.
But it was two finals that he averaged 32-12. He averaged 32-15 and then 32-12.
Yeah, he was phenomenal. Now, there's no doubt. You're right. Dame is just flat out wrong on that. That Kobe got you those rings. No,
all right, thank you, Joseph.
And that's a good point. Nobody had brought that up. That's a good point.
Chris, 3-0. Milwaukee.
Your boy, man, your pick could be over quick.
I know. Big time.
Oh my goodness.
It is early now. Don't get crazy.
But 3-0, Rob.
3-0. Yeah, second inning.
Wow. All right. We doing any more? Or we going to the break?
Yeah, we're good. Let's get you up there.
We got our man Charlie Casserly. You know it's always fun when the former NFL GM joins the I Couple. But first, let's bring in our man Ralph Irvin. Ralph, you want to weigh in quickly? I know you like hip hop.
I'll just put it this way.
I'm the hooper, piper, protect the vibe, viper. When I'm out the hoop, yo, you better.
That's the Foosh Nickens.
That's Shaq and the Foosh. Now that beat, though. I'm telling you, man, Shaq made dope songs because the beats were fresh and he could rhyme.
People forget, you know, that he could spit out words.
Yeah, he wasn't bad. I mean, he rode the beat. Look, like I said, and he wasn't totally basic. He was better than a lot of rappers.
Yeah.
He was good. He could flow on rhythm. Nah, he had different styles. And Shaq was legit.
No, I just thought that he came and he just kind of said, yeah, okay, young buck, please. Stop
yeah,
it.
He it was just, a battle just of eras. He was old school. Dame's new school. That's what it was.
And if you don't like the new stuff, you're not going to like that. It's a different right. style. I come from an era of beats and rhymes. If it doesn't rhyme, it's not the same to me. But that's me. All meanwhile. Right.